It gives me great pleasure to introduce Ian Atfield, who I have the pleasure of sharing a batch just alongside in Abel Tasman National Park. So I sort of felt I knew Ian from his great works around Wellington and from and summer, and then I realised I know quite enough about him to say. So I did some qualitative interviewing amongst my friends and colleagues. Ian is, I'm sure, known to many of you, which is why you're along here tonight. He designs wonderful buildings and civic spaces. He has a reputation of one of New Zealand's foremost architects and also an international reputation. I often see him at the airport where he's heading off from various places overseas. As Michael says, he has an iconic house on the Ridge Line in Kandala. He tells me he practices from the suburbs beyond the reach and the eyes of Wellington City Council. There is that joke about all architects' buildings leak, so we thought it was very appropriate that Ian actually tells us that this is not the case. But most particularly, we asked Ian along today because we've had a very wonderful series of seminars on Centre for Sustainable Cities, and one of the key issues of that is about urban form and the role that different disciplines like architects and urban planners, councils, and citizens have in the form that the city takes. And that's the area that we are researching, working very closely with the councils, and the role of architects is crucial, and of course many buildings in Wellington bear Ian's stamp. So I'm sure we're all really excited about what he's to say. He's going to talk to us for about 25 minutes. We're going to take some questions and then we'll be talking. Over to you.
Thank you, Brother. Of course my building leaks, and one of the things is that my wife, being an interior designer, believes I've actually outrun her, and we are able to get some excellent patterns on the wall after a long period of time. But it's also in personal construction. So my subject for this talk tonight was how small towns and suburbs affect urban design, but I'd like to, it's probably better titled as for all the small towns and suburbs and urban design. I've got Kelly here, my assistant, and I've said to her to provide some wallpaper so that you can watch something while I'm talking. I'm not ever going to refer to anything up here on the slide. They're a mixture of a good, a bad, and the indifferent, and I could let you know which ones I think are dreadful and which ones might be fairly good. But, unfortunately, I'm an architect and object driven, so it is a bit of a problem moving out of that sort of professional base. My experience really with urban design has really started. It's come over a long period of time just by having some good minds in my office, and also by accident by doing a competition in the Philippines and having to meet Mrs. Marcus after never being out of New Zealand. My mother-in-law told her to me, never trust a woman who wears purple. And when I met Mrs. Marcus, she had purple stretching rose, so I was always a little bit worried. But this talk was sort of inspired the other day by one of the people in our office who went into Wellington City Council. And a client who we never worked for decided that he couldn't sell his sites in a recent suburban area, and wondered whether we could look at them with the idea of building on them. The person he spoke to said, you shouldn't be speaking to the urban design department. Urban design is about cities, and this is a suburb, so you should go and see a planner. Which was a major concern for me, and was also too helpful to my thinking about urban design. One of the people who worked for our office for some time was Stuart Niven, and his definition of urban design for many years was a crossroads with two houses on it. I think it's one of the encouraging things, whether we call it urban design or anything else. I think it's something which is a new language for an ever-increasingly intelligent population who is involved, whether they love it or not, more in their physical environment. And it's subject without the professional position and the self-explained expertise on it. So the person who pretended that she was an urban designer knew really nothing about the subject, which I think is really great, and most accurate as well. I think urban design is affects all the physical structures that we do in this country. It also affects roading and infrastructure, and should also apply to landscape. I always think it's the context before you do anything, and it's the context after you've finished. And it's important to finish something with a level of respect. And if you get respect from other people in that overall context, that's what urban design is about. So it's a much broader subject, and it's a subject that people should not intellectually know too much about. So it needs to deal with small settlements and large. It needs to talk about the relationship between town and country. And I think this is one of the most important challenges that we have. It affects small settlements as well as large settlements. It needs to talk about ages. And I'm very, very strong about ages. You know, I think the most important things that we have in any town is the ages to the countryside and the ages to the water. Wellington has some good ages here to the water. It has a great edge to be a traditional town belt. We have people who have other ideas about the waterfront, but I don't think that's the most difficult edge, because tidal warming will take care of that. And we may see the image showed demonstrated in the paper the other day of Langdon Quay being full of water, which I think is pretty exciting to me. You know, and it does mean that the traditional edge might etch itself into the city, like Wellington. I always think that you know, we should remember that cities on water sieges were made by people arriving at towns above. And they demonstrate a certain pattern which is really important. A tough edge where they unloaded, tributaries up to the hills where it was safe, and a trading street, one street back where you can trade on both sides. We are quite fortunate in Wellington of having the landscape which does exactly like that. We have a coastal edge at present, which is sort of seen as a Queen's Chain and a place to walk your dogs in fine weather. But we have another characteristic bit coming back into it, where the tributaries are actually gaining life. So with tidal warming, we might actually get water coming in strange parts. And a new edge, which is a very important space between the water and the land. The other edge, which I think is extremely important, is the edge between the country and the town. And the best people as custodians of the edge that I always think are the fishermen, who are the custodians of the water's edge. And when I think about my early time in Wellington, when those two fishermen had their factors, say, the mackerel, their boats, their ropes, everything associated with them, were in that place we can walk through, and everyone did it with respect. As soon as the Department of Conservation took those factors away, all you walk through were broken glass. And there are some people who are the great custodians of the water edge, and it's a respect for the city. And there's some great people who are custodians of the edges of town, and they're farmers who have a respect for the country. So I think we actually have to change the way we look at the model. Our traditional model was a green belt, a town within the green belt. I think we deserve 4 or 5 stories on the outer edge. for the farmers who are retired from the dairy industry, looking out to spy the first roaming dog. So, you know, and that applies to the small town as well as the as a city. The cities are more difficult to work with, but I often think that if we actually had a four-story town in a place like Queenstown, we wouldn't have the hopelessness of a suburban spread in a place which is so precious and has a great countryside. So, you know, you go to other places in the world where four or five stories is very, very appropriate. And the sheep and the cattle graze up to the last house. And I think it's a model which we should think very positively of. The other area which I just want to brief on is the zealots of planning, because I think we actually have a number of people who actually don't understand how a settlement should actually work. And so they take their sort of precious problems and impose them on us. And they are the tree huggers within the towns, you know, and the landscape and park advocates. I have a responsible position at present. I'm on the property board of Auckland City Council, which is a lousy position to have, but it's very, very interesting. And one of the things which we look after is 120 parks. My personal feeling is we should sell 60 of them because they don't work, you know. And the reason why I say that is that they are possessed by the backyards of people who face them. And one would never go into those parks if you're a wise-minded person, and you wouldn't go there in the dark. You know, parks are very, very important to the community, but they have to be in the right places. They have to be in the area where you meet other people, where the people around those green spaces are custodians of the spaces. And I often think that, you know, it's really unfortunate that we still don't encourage roads through parks. The other people I'm down on at present are the view experts, the people who always want to protect the view, you know. And, you know, I know for a fact that, you know, kids like the view of their favourite friend, and old people like the view of the another person that's at a relatively short distance, and where they can't be seen back themselves, you know. So it's the view of an elderly person is shutters, a window, thin curtains, heavy curtains, and when the curtains spray, they tack a piece of newspaper up so they can lift up the newspaper to get a view. Now, that's also very good insulation and stops you, prevents you from having double glazing. There have been other exponents who say we should eliminate cars and replace them with pedestrians. Well, that's also a very, very stupid idea, you know, because we're all developing things together, including the car makers, you know, and it is really important that we actually we understand what cars do for people. People who own cars, which are really important, who travel by themselves, it's the only private time they have in their lives. They don't have to their spouses at all. And they virtually rely on them as their own house if they travel them. The thing which we should be concentrating on is the quality of the streets, not the elimination of cars to replace them with pedestrians. And we know that when we have poor infrastructure, the replacement of cars with pedestrians is also going to create an extended poor infrastructure. To get people into the town, it's really interesting. In Wellington, you need 0.5 to 0.6 of a car for every apartment you build. In Auckland, you need 1.2 cars for every apartment you build. And in Christchurch, you need two cars for every apartment you build. So that's a very, very interesting statistics on how people start to inhabit a city. And, you know, Wellington is really good from that point of view. We have learnt to live in the city. New world has followed us. And the real estate agents are now advertising at close to more Wilson's rather than the view from Orient Bay. Heritage. The heritage zealots is the other area which I'm totally concerned about. There's no reason for freezing the past. You know, a lot of it's pure crap. You know, what we should be what we should be doing is actually understanding the past and building from it, not away from it. And we tend to conserve rather than adapt, and it is absolutely important that we look carefully at what messages our heritage gives us and build with it rather than away from it, and stop making it so easily precious that it's untouchable to other people. Now, I just want to come to the role of a small town, because I think, you know, if one is going to make those changes have to apply to the small settlement as well as the larger. And the larger ones are much more difficult than the smaller ones. Wellington is very well contained. It has green belts, it has great harbour, it has great focus. The outskirts are still very, very poor. We're subdividing too much land. And we are too complacent in many ways. I look at Kākaka, you know, it's a small town which we go through quite often. It's got a great main street. It's got 20% of its population are now Northern European. They don't all live there, but they earn their income from outside the Golden Bay area. That's a great town to start with, you know. And you can imagine, you know, sort of going down the outer main street, entry is really important for road, for hesitation. Passing the last cow, and the last cow sits in front of the pub, you know, that is so important. That's heritage, farming, working together. And, you know, there's no reason why a small town like Kākaka can't be four stories in the future, because we will find ourselves living in small towns. And by default, the people of Wellington have actually created greater, whether you like it or not. It's something that's not created by design. It's all planets in the Wairarapa. It's created by people who are escaping Wellington with a certain amount of knowledge about coffee and food. You know, someone got up at an architectural conference recently and said, oh, I don't know why you bloody athletes are dithering around. They said, coffee has done much more for the physical environment in the last 20 years than athletes have done in the last 20 years. It's stopped everything else sort of being talked about, you know. So, and the other area which we have to concentrate on is the suburbs. They won't go away. They're there. We create them. And people will still live there. It's pretty lonely up there, and it's socially quite difficult in certain suburbs. We have to address it, and we have to address it by intensification, not in the way that they have moved it, like granny plate at the back, and separation. You know, we actually have to understand how good suburbs work. And one simple tool is zero yards, you know. And zero yards is building to the neighbour's boundary. Currently, the neighbour gives permission to the person to build to the boundary. But that neighbour doesn't get the same privilege. And the simple instrument that I would use is that once someone gives permission for a zero yard, it applies to both sides of the boundary. And when you actually apply that formula, and look through the accumulation of that formula in a suburb, it simply happens. So it's not planning rules, it's actually some sort of understanding. And there's a way forward in those sorts of processes, which I think would be really important. So, you know, just some simple mechanism to actually attribute zero yards to both properties rather than one would be extremely helpful. Now, I've introduced this sort of small mechanism to about 10 councils, and none of them would even think of taking it on as a situation, you know, and I can't actually understand it. I would love someone to come to me and someone said, well, you can build 6 metres to your neighbours and you have no windows. You know, build another 6 metres right next to them. And one of the things about close walls, you can get your heating from your neighbour's property rather than your own, you know. So they can actually pay the bill for your heating, you know, which is really great. We have to find a new model which respects the social changes and the awareness that was in that society at present. We have frozen so many things from the past. And we look at the building models that we have right now, we insulate them, we overheat them, we put fewer and fewer people in them, They're not very appropriate. You can't meet people by accident. You only meet people by them opening the door, and then most of them now they telephone you. We need to just look at the quality of housing that we have. We also need to work the structure of relationships and families have changed dramatically, and we are still living in housing which are based on a nuclear family, which is quite stupid. And we have to move quickly. And I think that if we can move that quickly with coffee and food, we can move just as quickly within the physical environment. And a lot of people say, no, people won't change that much. What is really interesting is that a place like Wellington, who has actually started now to retire within the city rather than out at the Gold Coast, which is really, really important. People retire. Some people retire at 21, and some people retire at 90. And what we actually have to understand is that people will move to a place because it actually has those sort of comforts. It has the ability of meeting other people by accident rather than by design, and we seem to want to design most of the context, but the most pleasurable ones are when we meet someone by accident.